Welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. Today in the studio, we have co-host, and I'm going to say guest, John Gadaros, because I haven't seen this guy in quite a while.
I know, it's been a while. Good to be back.
Yeah, and also another thing in your title, fantasy football champion.
Yeah.
So he beat me in the championship game. Your team peaked at the right time, and obviously mine did not.
Yeah.
So, and you got into the playoffs by 0.14 points.
Yeah.
Because it was really tight for that last spot.
I came from the bottom and just had to win it all.
So. Yeah. And the nice thing about winning something related to the Williams family is you'll never get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
John has won a lot of bets that I don't think he's ever got paid on any of them.
Nope. And I know that I never will.
So. Yeah. Well, at least you know where you're at.
Yeah.
I think that goes without saying for most of us.
Yeah.
But remember that one year that we were in hunting camp and you were like, I don't even remember what it was about, but you're like, Michael, what, if your dad does this when you get home, I'll give you $100. Michael really wanted to hold you to that $100. And he kept bugging me about it. And I'm like, then call John.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something, buddy. When we say things in hunting camp around the campfire, they don't actually resonate in the real world.
Right. Yeah.
So it was a good lesson for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're busy being a dad. You and Dylan have these little babies that you're having to deal with. How old is your daughter now?
Almost 5 months.
She looks, based on pictures, to be like a pretty happy baby.
Oh, yeah, super happy. She's been super good, which is really good for us. I mean,
yeah, like always smiling and just cute baby, too.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, thank you.
Thank God you and Dylan married attractive women, because you have some cute babies. You
know? I agree. I'm blessed in that realm for sure.
Yeah. Genetics on that other side really helped.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you guys are both being good dads, so it's a little harder to get you in here with family life and work and being able to actually go hunt.
I know.
So,
yeah,
you know, but I'm glad to see you today. And we actually planned this because there's also a gun show in town. So it's a double whammy. So we're going to do a little podcasting and then go check out the gun show and maybe make some bad decisions.
Yeah.
You know,
hopefully not too bad of decisions, but
yeah, I feel like you're probably better at knowing, like, if a deal's a really good deal, you'll probably pounce on it. But if it's not, you've probably got enough guns that you don't need to really do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't gone to the ATM yet. So. But I figure a lot of those vendors probably take Venmo.
Yeah, or there's usually an ATM there too, so you can kind of just wait.
Yeah, that's probably the best play.
Yeah.
In that way, I won't get myself in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm looking for like a small shotgun for grouse or smaller birds. Like I was thinking like a 410, but Dylan said, you know, ammo's going to be hard to come by. Maybe do a 20 gauge. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
410s are expensive. Like the ammo's expensive if you can find it. For some reason, it's been super hard to find. Mm-hmm. But yeah, 20 gauge wouldn't be bad. You're not going to blow things up or
anything.
Yeah,
but 410s are cool, I think.
They are cool. We have a little, it's 410, 22, like over under.
Yeah.
Really, it's super short. Not accurate at all. Doesn't do us any good. But
oh,
it's
really?
Pretty cool.
Even the 410 side's not accurate? Yeah,
well, it's... It's accurate, but you got to be like right on top of something because
gotcha.
It's no range. But yeah.
So you need that grouse to just hunker down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a cool gun though. But
yeah, I just want to, I told Dylan when you get to a gun show, it's overwhelming because there's so many guns.
Yeah.
And they all start to blend together after a while. And then you got to really slow down and hold up each gun and kind of look at it and get your hands on it. And then if you do make a bad decision and bring one home, that gun is like the most beautiful thing you own when you bring it home.
Yeah.
You just keep looking at, because I typically at a gun show will buy a Woodstock gun. And then when I get it home, I'm like, gosh, that wood is so beautiful. You know, like I just get obsessed with it. But when they're in that sea of other guns, they don't really stand out.
Right.
You know? But I don't know. I didn't used to like gun shows when I was younger. And now I could probably spend all day there.
Yeah.
But
I think all the gun shows I've been to, I think I've only bought one gun.
And that's impressive.
It was from the gun store that I normally buy all my guns from anyways. Like I had seen it before, but just something about it being at the gun shows.
That day,
yeah.
You couldn't let it stay.
Yeah.
I've bought two guns at gun shows, a 220 Swift and a 243.
Yeah.
And I love them both. And they're just, I don't know, there's just something about it. And so I'm hoping to make a bad decision today, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I didn't tell my wife that, but... She'll live with it if I bring one home. I'm actually going to try to sell one too. So. Yeah,
so that way, I mean, you're really not buying a new one. Like you're just replacing it.
Yeah. If you swap one for one,
then, that's what I say.
I feel like that's a good day. So other thing that's going to be happening soon is, and I don't know why we do this in Oregon, but we have all the sportsman shows crammed together. So we've got the Willamette Valley Sportsman Show. I think it's the first weekend in February. Maybe it's the second weekend in February. But then the big show, the Portland show, is like the third weekend in February.
Yeah.
So it's back-to-back sportsman shows.
Have you heard of that other one that's in, it's in March up there?
I saw that one too. They call it like the Hunting Expo or something. Yeah. And I've never been to that one.
Yeah, me neither.
But I don't, maybe it's focused only on hunting, so you don't have all the fishing stuff.
Yeah, I think when I was reading about it, and it's, yeah, just like only hunting brands and stuff like that.
You see it
like
on
that.
Facebook?
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy how all these things show up on Facebook that you find out about. And I was going to ask you, on your spotting scope, did you switch the on glass? Is that what it is called?
All in.
Oh, see, so there's a bunch of those too. So Facebook keeps feeding me ads for on glass.
Yeah.
But yours is called, called all in.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I want to upgrade to something different than what I've got. Cause it's just, I've got the old universal, whatever that first one, phone scope.
Oh yeah.
And it's just clunkier than what you got. I mean, it's, I was watching you with those magnets and it's like, boom,
yeah,
you're there. You don't got to worry about it.
Yeah. It's definitely, I like it for that. Just the usability way more than the phone scope. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot smaller. It's just a regular phone case. Like there's like, I've had it on my phone forever. Like I just forget to take it off it. Cause it's just a normal case.
Oh, and say the name of it again. So I don't forget.
All in.
All in. I better write it down.
Yeah.
All in. We're not plugging them, but this is for my own brain, so it sinks in. But maybe we will plug them.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, at All In, if you're listening, John, what do you think of the product?
It's great. I love it.
Yeah. It looked pretty slick.
Yeah, it's nice.
And your buddies over at 11 Seasons, I reached out to them because I wanted to get some XLT clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want to try their puffy and probably like just one of those more warm weather, you know, UV type shirts.
Yeah.
And they said hit them on the next time they're running stuff because, you know, it's like you don't want to go just to the printer for one guy's XLT clothes.
Right.
You know,
so they're pretty nice. I have that puffy and then I have like one of every color of those UV shirts and they're pretty nice. I like those.
Yeah. So thank you, 11 Seasons. I look forward to seeing that. This is our sponsorship part of the show, it seems like, but even though we don't have any sponsors.
Right.
So we're going to try to be at the Willamette Valley Sportsman Show again, but I'm talking to them since we don't make money on this show.
Yeah.
I said, can we get the nonprofit price? So they're working on that for me.
Yeah, there you go.
So it'll be a little cheaper maybe.
Yeah.
Because we had fun last year, but 3 days is going to be tough.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if those wives and babies are going to let you guys out of the house for that many days in a row.
We'll just bring them with us.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. Yeah, we could rotate in like a daycare facility.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So the other thing we were going to talk about today is some of the changes that are happening in Oregon in regards to mule deer. And, you know, our mule deer population has been declining steadily for a while, and they've been studying it. And they've been using these collared deer studies. And we've all seen them when we're out there, you know, a doe with a big collar on it.
Yeah.
But when you looked at the actual amount of animals that they were tracking, it was a very, very small percentage of the population. And I don't know if they actually tracked the bucks too, or if it was just the does or what. But because I would think behaviors are going to be totally different between bucks and does.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the elk in my wildlife refuge, the cows will always stay down there. And the bulls stay in the high country until it's breeding season and then the bulls come down, you know? And so I don't know. I mean, obviously mule deer are different and I think they are more, not as solitary as probably elk are, but still, it just seems like there's so much unknown and it's very hard to collect data, but we do know the populations are going in the wrong direction and we definitely as hunters want to improve that. And I'm not, to be clear, before we start talking about this, I'm in the camp that I think Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is trying to do the best they can. Like, I'm not one of those guys that wants to blame them for everything. There's a lot of hunters that just feel like, you know, they're screwing things up, but that's just what everybody says. But it's a very complicated challenge.
Right.
You know, you have so many interest groups you're trying to keep happy, you know, between ranchers and hunters and just politics involved in all those things. And they are trying to do what's best for the resource, but their hands are also often tied on what they can do as far as with manpower and money. And I mean, it's a very complicated thing. I did see recently, just this is a little off topic, but Oregon, we're going to get our first highway crossing that's set up for animals.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, like down by Ashland area, and we got a federal grant to do it, and it's, I want to say it's like $22 million or something.
Wow.
But it's basically a bridge over I-5 that'll allow animals that are crossing frequently to be able to go over the freeway.
Huh.
So that was my understanding. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I've seen them online and stuff, and they make them look like a natural thing, and they look pretty cool. But I mean, if it's $22 million for one of them, that doesn't seem like a real easy thing to implement in a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah. So this mule deer change. So what was funny is Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has been talking about it for a while. And I don't think hunters were really paying attention until we got our regulation book for this year. And then it's on page 41. There's the Oregon Mule Deer Plan implementation, and it shows the new hunt areas for 2026. And so online, on all the Facebook forums and stuff, all of a sudden, guys were getting their 2025 regs and sending this picture of this thing. And I sent it to Dylan when I first saw it. I'm like, is this real? Is this actually happening? Yeah. You know? So, and I'm sure there was public meetings. One, and I'm not trying to rag on ODFW, but one thing I think that is challenging is getting the information out for the meetings and whatnot, because they have a meeting series going on right now that started January 6th. But if you go on their website, you can't find it anywhere. Huh. So I found it on a hunting forum, and then I watched the playback on YouTube, and then they're going to do like four or five different, and they're talking about the entire wildlife management plan for the state, and they're going like species by species, and it's going to be kind of long, but I'm going to try to tune into it. And it's a live meeting that you can join as the public and ask questions. And
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Or you can rewatch it on YouTube. So, but let's dive into this. So they do have the mule deer management plan out on the website, and that's another thing that can be challenging to find. And we can put some links in our, when we air this podcast, but when I tried to find it, I kept finding the wrong stuff. It was like really generic mule deer information. I was like, this doesn't even say anything, you know? And then I finally found the real stuff, and there's just a ton of data. So it goes back to 1952. And back in 1952, there was 126,000 hunters in Oregon. And they harvested 32,000 bucks and 20,000 does. So 53,000 animals back in 52. So then you fast forward to now. And this was probably silly to do, but I used a spreadsheet and I looked at all the applicants and tags issued. And what it comes out to be is about 40,000 tags in Oregon get issued every year. And that number of applicants, I think, was about 120,000. So it's about a 3-to-1 situation with people that apply that people that actually get mule deer tags. And so, but according to this stats, which the table cuts off in 2022, in 2022, there was 37,765 tags, and they harvested a total, this is bucks and does, but only 240 of these animals were does, 10,619 bucks. So it was 10,859 animals harvested by hunters in 2022. So as you know, as it compared to 1952 with 53,000, and if you look at the chart, I mean, the biggest harvest year between bucks and does was about 97,000 animals.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And I believe the population, I want to say it's like around 160,000 mule deer, and I don't really remember. It's probably in here somewhere. But, you know, when I looked at the thing, what they're doing, they're making these units larger than what they used to be, and they're combining all of our hunt units. So right now, well, there's 44 different Eastern Oregon units to accommodate these 40,000 tags, and they're reducing that to 22. So they're cutting it in half, the number of units. And so then in my mind, I was like going, well, is there still going to be 40,000 tags over those 22 units? And then, you know, your guys can still hunt their same areas they've always hunted, but now it's called a different name or whatever. And they haven't clearly defined that yet or where the boundary, they drew kind of a crude map, but you can't really tell where the boundary lines are. And I'm sure that'll get clarified before next year. But from my perspective, I do think tag numbers will get reduced. Like, I'm thinking it'll go from like the 40,000 to maybe 30,000 in 2026. And I don't know any of this. This is all speculative.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts? I mean,
that's what Dylan and I talk about it quite a bit. And it's just like wondering, yeah, what they're going to do. Like, if it is like, since they're combining all these things. And then, so like, are they going to combine the tag numbers or are they going to drop the tag numbers because there is less? Or it's going to be weird. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do. But
yeah, and this is only impacting mule deer. You know, when we bring this up to people that don't know, they're like, they're changing all the zones for everything. And I'm like, no, it's just the mule deer. They're trying to get the mule deer population in a better place, which I'm all for that. And, you know, you've got all kinds of things that are impacting that, you know, habitat and feed and weather patterns and, you know, human encroachment. I mean, there's disease. There's so many things. And thankfully, as far as I know, we still don't have a CWD case documented in Oregon that I know of. Yeah. And so we're CWD free, but you know, it's interesting. I've done a lot of looking at other states' mule deer populations, and like, I want to say Washington only has like 90,000 mule deer. I just saw that stat on a hunting video a while back. I was like, man, we have a lot more than Washington does, you know, but obviously we know there's other areas that have more than we've got, but I don't feel like, at least where we hunt, the mule deer seem fairly healthy.
Yeah, very.
I mean, the does are always having twins. I mean, the one thing I noticed this year, coyotes were everywhere, you know? And I mean, we were seeing 3 to 5 coyotes a day.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we've encountered that one cougar over there. We've never really seen any black bear over there, but, so this study that Department of Fish and Wildlife did, there's all kinds of stuff. I pulled out just the tables that I found kind of interesting. And so they did a study in just causes of deer mortality from 2005 to 2012, specifically mule deer in South Central Oregon. And illegally harvested animals in that area they were watching, there was 23. Legally harvested was 21. So there was more poachers killing deer than actual hunters. So it was a fairly small sample size. But then cougars also took 21 deer. Roadkill took 13. Coyotes took 3. Disease took 4. And here's what's crazy. The unknown mortality, 76 animals.
What's so, the unknown?
You know, who knows? They just find a dead deer and they don't know. They can't figure out how it died, you know, just by looking at it. That was 47% of the animals they analyzed were in the unknown category. So, I mean, how do you manage to something that is so hard to put your finger on, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think ODFW relies on hunters to report how successful they were. But a lot of hunters, I don't know how accurate they are in that reporting.
Right.
You know, I mean, they'll do it because they don't want to pay the fine. But are they being truthful and are they being accurate?
Yeah, or some, are they just putting no?
Yeah, they're just saying no every year, even if they harvested an animal. And I don't know why people would do that necessarily, other than they're worried about that if they say they were successful, that maybe they'll give out less tags or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, and I do think as hunters, and we talk about this quite a bit in our circles, it's like we have all these tools now that have made hunting easier to be successful at. And that's kind of unfortunate. They're fun to have them, but at the same time, we don't want to always be harvesting animals, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the goal. So it's a hard balance. The other chart that I looked at that I found interesting was the age of female mule deer and when they would die from various events. And so, like, you know, it's kind of odd, but it's within that first 6 month period, basically everything is killing them, you know, like cougars, coyotes was the number one cause in the under 6 month age. Natural causes, vehicle collisions, hunting and poaching. But really hunters are not doing a lot of the killing of these animals.
Yeah.
But people always want to blame the predators for everything. And I've been guilty of that at times. Like, oh, ever since 1994, Measure 18, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, when we banned hunting, you know, bear and cougar with dogs, and we also banned bait for bear at that time, which I didn't realize that was a combined bill. But that bill passed in 1994, Measure 18, and there were 629,000 Oregonians that were for banning the hunting of bear and cougar with dogs and banning the bait. And there was 586,000 Oregonians that said we shouldn't do that. So we were almost 50-50 on it.
Yeah, and that's close.
No one has repealed it. And no one has, as far as I know, tried to repeal it. And I remember is, you know, let's see, 1994, I'd have been 15. I remember the commercials that would come on. And they would show like this bear up in a tree or with its cubs and these mean, angry, like gnarling dogs with their drool coming out of their face, chasing it up a tree and then the hunter shooting it and it rolling down the hill. Like they had these really graphic commercials against it. And it was obviously effective because the bill was made into law. And so, I mean, this is breaking news, John. So yesterday, because I've been talking about doing it forever and I had done a little research on how to do it, I went and petitioned the state of Oregon to repeal that bill. And the way you do that as a citizen, you would have to, because enough time has passed, you can't just overturn the bill. You would, or the measure, the ballot measure, you have to create a new one that basically takes it away.
Okay.
So I put in a request to the state of Oregon to be able to do that. And then I'm not entirely sure how the flow goes, but if they'll either come back to me and say they want more information, I think, or I didn't, or I'm missing a form or something, or they'll say, yeah, you can do it. And then you have to get a certain amount of signatures from the citizens to be able to put it on the ballot. And you have to verify signatures on everybody, and you got to make sure nobody signs it twice. You know, it's a very elaborate process, but then I think you have to get 4-5% of the voting population to sign. And then once you get all those signatures, then you can actually get on the ballot. So I think it would have been nice if I would have started sooner. Yeah. So then I would have had these signatures available at these sportsman shows that are coming up, but we'll see how long it takes. But my goal is to have it on the ballot for 2026, which would be November of 2026. And I feel like there's enough of us in the outdoorsman community. And the bear and cougar thing is just one thing. We like to blame it for everything, but we have over 30,000 bears in Oregon, which puts us in the top 5 in the nation. And we have over 2,500 cougars, which puts us in the top 6. And we know those numbers are probably not accurate because cougars are, in particular, they're very elusive and hard to find. And I think there's a lot more of them out there than they think they are.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I got off topic a little bit, but I wanted to talk about that anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of different stuff in here that I was looking at. And they did some targeted cougar harvesting from 2009 to 2017 just to see what it would do for populations of ungulates. And one of the units they were in was Heppner. And they met the objective, meaning that they took out the cougars, the amount of cougars that they were looking for. And that improved the elk population, but it did not have an impact on the mule deer. They just seemed like the population size was the same. And then they did another study where they didn't kill as many of the cougars that they wanted to in the same unit, and it actually improved the mule deer population. Huh. So, you know, and I don't know if it's like maybe specific cats are targeting, you know, different either elk or deer or... And if they happen to get the right ones and take them out of the population, if that's what's making the difference. But so again, it's just when you look at, but I mean, across the board on this study from 2009 to 2017, they put a little asterisk by that Heppner unit too, and that it was also a coyote control area, which I didn't realize ODFW will come in and just knock out a bunch of coyotes in certain really? Areas too. Yeah. I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
They're kind of quiet about it.
Yeah.
So, but across the board, yeah, no kidding. Across the board though, like Ukiah, Winnaha, the elk populations were improving. They didn't measure mule deer in Ukiah and the mule deer in Winnaha, it seemed to not have an effect. But then they also did Steens, Warner, and Interstate units and targeted cougar kills, and it improved the mule deer population in all three of those areas.
I wonder if it's maybe like the terrain, maybe.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, or just like there's not as many cats in a particular area.
Yeah, or just like the mule deer aren't hanging out you know, as much in these areas, and they're taking all these cats out of there, so it's not really going to make a difference. Where those other areas that are more deer specific, it's improving it because they're right there in their habitat. But
yeah, and in most of these, so I mean, they studied it in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different units, and only 2 of the units they met their objective for the amount of cougars they wanted to take. So that just shows you how elusive these things are to even, yeah, when you're targeting them and you're trying to get them, you still can't get it done, you know? So, and then that table doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, oh, so they break down all the units in 2024 data, and they're looking at the and they list the population of mule deer in each one of those areas. So for example, the first one on here is Beulah Malheur unit. That mule deer population for that herd as of 2023 was 11,272 animals. And then they mark them in the growth rate chart to see like how much that population is going up and down. And that particular unit is considered extreme concern because the population just isn't growing. You know, it's like going down every year. Their annual population change over the last 5 years is 0.97%. So it's growing at less than 1%.
Yeah.
And so that one was one of the worst ones on the chart. And it's they're alphabetical, so it's just random that's at the top of the chart. But like, you know, let's take Ochoco's for an example. The population in 2023 was 6,690 animals. It's also in that extreme concern category because it's 0.94 growth rate over 5 years. So, I mean, they're just concerned, and I think they should be, and I'm happy that this is getting some attention. But as hunters, I think we're also just like, well, what's this going to mean for us? We want the deer to be healthier, and we want the population to be going in the right direction. But we also want the opportunity to hunt,
yeah,
you know? The one last table I had highlighted in here, and I'll stop talking about this, is that this was a chart from 2021 to 2023, and it's showing the buck to doe ratio. And so, you know, their goal is, I believe it's one buck to every 100 does is what they're targeting in most of these areas. And, you know, like when you look at the chart, it doesn't look terrible to me, but it looks like they're not hitting that objective across the board. You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to read, and I didn't make any notes on it. So sorry, that wasn't very well said, but, the point is this plan is out there, and you can get really deep into it. And the day that I was doing this research, man, I dove in hard and I was looking at all the stuff, and it's really interesting. But the hard part is the studies are all different timelines. None of the timelines overlap. And even the collar deer studies was a very small segment of the population. And I'm not being critical. Resources are limited and you do the best with what you can do, you right. know? But I feel like predator control is one that as hunters, we always fall back on because they are seemingly between coyotes, wolves, black bears, cougars. And obviously you can't kill wolves in most places, but, as hunters, we can kill the cougars and the black bears and the coyotes. And I feel like not only does it extend your hunting season and give you something else to go out in the woods and look for, but it gives you some opportunities to help the deer and elk population. So,
yeah, exactly.
So we'll see how this thing all goes. I think everyone's a little bit nervous, and there's a lot of people that just don't trust, for whatever reason, the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm not in that camp. I kind of want to just be optimistic and hope that whatever they're doing is going to work. So, and we'll see. I mean, time will tell. It's kind of a, who knows? So we thought we might have another guest visitor today, Mr. Dylan Williams, who was supposed to possibly show up, but
he's bailing.
You think so?
We'll or see. He might just be sitting out in the parking lot waiting for us to be done.
Just wait.
Yeah.
Hey guys. So he was going to come in and maybe visit us today. So, and we were going to kind of talk about your guys' hunts in 2024. So before, if he does show up, we can dive into your guys' elk hunt, but let's talk about your deer hunts this year. How did you, I mean, I know you had some opportunities.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that I don't think you got it done this year on your deer.
No, right? I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you didn't want to shoot a little one because didn't you have some opportunities at some small bucks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had, well, my wife was hunting this year too. Mm-hmm. So that was my kind of main goal, was to get her on a buck. And so I could have shot a lot of the little ones, but one, I didn't want to. And two, I just wanted her to get one because I thought it would be cool and to see if she actually wanted to hunt more. But
so you were hunting Western Oregon blacktail, right?
Yep.
And what gun was Jordan hunting with?
She was using a 7mm 08.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just was curious with your collection what you picked out for her. To...
No, that one I bought specifically for her. Nice. So it wasn't even any of mine. But then after, well, once she had the baby, then her strength and everything was down. And it was a heavier gun. So then she used one of my lighter ones, and that was a lot easier for her. But yeah.
So how many days in total do you think you guys hunted?
We hunted quite a bit. I would say every weekend we went out, and then I would go like during the week after work and stuff like that.
And just, you had some opportunities at some small stuff, passed on those, or you couldn't get Jordan on them fast enough or something. But then I know, wasn't there a day where you guys were like in just crazy weather conditions? And I saw a picture with Kyle and Dylan and like holding a shower curtain over you or something. Talk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, we had spotted some nice bucks, but yeah, the weather was crazy. Wind was howling and it didn't help. We were like up on top of a knoll, so we were getting hit with everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were holding a shower curtain tarp over the top of me because it was raining so hard. Like you wipe your scope off, but as soon as you get ready to shoot, it's covered again. Mm-hmm. And so the tarp thing didn't work. It was too thin. It was just blowing all over the place. And yeah, it didn't help anything.
And you guys were how far from these deer?
Maybe 300 yards or so. Okay. Yeah.
I thought when Dylan described it, he made it sound like it was 500 or 600. So
yeah, one of them was pretty far, mm-hmm. maybe five, but the other ones were closer, but it was just, I mean,
there's
nothing
just no
we
way
could
to
do.
Get it
yeah.
Done. Yeah. That's frustrating. Yeah. So you just got to watch them.
Yep. Pretty much. Yeah.
And they were good ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one we saw for sure, the farther one, it was a really nice one. But the other ones up close, they were still nice bucks. I would have shot any of them, but just.
I feel like, I mean, I don't have as much blacktail experience as you guys do. Just have never really done it that much. But they're so elusive, in my opinion. I mean, that I look at any blacktail as a trophy to me.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're so smart and they have so much cover and they're so hard to find. And I mean, we've seen a lot of them, but I don't know. It's awesome to always better to get a bigger one if you can, just because you get more meat and it's more fun that way. And I do think the older ones are definitely smarter. They've learned, like those fresh little guys are like, now that we can hunt spikes, especially, it's like, some of those little spikes, I mean, their spikes are like half the size of my pinky. I wouldn't necessarily want to bring that home.
Yeah.
So, and then we'll just assume that Dylan's going to stiff us today.
Yeah.
But so, look, I mean, I think you might as well tell some of the elk story. And then if he decides he's going to show up, then he can chime in.
Yeah. Yeah, so Dylan and I both had coast elk tags, and we went out with one of his friends that knew some area where some elk were, and he walked us in there. Kind of, we checked out a bunch of different spots opening day, saw some sign and stuff like that, but no elk. And the second day we went out to a spot where we had seen the most sign, and that's, we, you know, walked up in there, and I mean, right at daylight is when we spotted like four or five cows just feeding in this clear cut. We were like 150 yards away, and it was the same, you know, typical coast morning. It was raining and windy and
foggy.
Yeah. So we're sitting there, we got set up, and we're just kind of waiting for it to get light enough where we could see what they were, you know, cows or there was a spike in there or what. I mean, we weren't going to be picky, that's for sure. And then just more kept feeding up over this little hill, and they just kept feeding and feeding, and they were all cows. And I was like, there's no way. Like, we were like, I was doubting it. Like I had to go back through and make sure that I didn't miss any because Dylan didn't bring any binos. So it was just me.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, that the bull that we ended up killing, it came running up behind all of them and it was the only one in the group. And yeah, but it was really cool just to, I mean, it all happened so fast. Like it seemed like it took forever while we were there, but like in reality, it was like maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah. They move too. Yeah. They can cover so much ground when they're kind of feeding and on the move.
Yeah. You know,
it's amazing. In Idaho this year, we watched a herd go across this clearing and they were way up above us. And I was with Josh and, but we knew Kyler and Hunter were up on the top. And so we thought we were trying to get in contact with them. Hey, there's a whole herd going across where we thought they were, but they were quite a ways behind them. And I was like, man, Josh, if we wanted to pursue those, I would go down this trail and cut up there. And so anyway, we didn't do that. We just kind of watched them. And sure enough, the area I said to go, we watched them go right through it. But there was no way we could have closed that distance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they're on the move, even if they're kind of feeding and not running, you'd think you could catch up to them, but they're still just cooking.
Yeah.
You know? And Dylan said, like, at first it was like, are those elk or is that bushes or like,
yeah, you know? Yeah, especially with all the fog and everything, like he spotted them first and I was like, oh, there's no way. And then like we kind of get closer and I was like, oh yeah, sure enough. And then it's like the, you know, you could only see the four and there was kind of like a little roll in the hill. I was like, well, do we try to get closer? We just kind of hang out here. And I mean, it was a good thing that we just hung out there because we would have pushed all of it, you know, we wouldn't have seen any of it, but it worked out. I mean, yeah. It worked out better than I would have could have imagined.
Yeah. I mean, these are Roosevelts, which a lot of guys don't ever even see a Roosevelt bull.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're very elusive. They're really hard to get, especially during that 4-day rifle season, you know. And I was pretty pumped when I got that picture come across.
Yeah, like, it was so much fun. And the cool, like, the funny thing is there's like a main road, kind of like you could see it from the top of the clear cut. And when we had went there the day before, there were people, they just sit right there on the main road and then you can glass up in the clear cut to see if there's anything there. That way you can kind of see before you walk in there and waste your time if there's anything there. So this whole time that we were hunting, there's people down there on the road kind of glassing and like
just watching.
Yeah, just watching us. Yeah. And then as soon as we started shooting, you see them all just turn around and leave. And like when we were getting it all cleaned up and ready to go, like cars would pull up, you could see them like glass and then they would just turn around and leave. And it was pretty funny to see.
Yeah. Watching these guys harvesting elk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always fun when there's an audience.
Yeah.
A little bit of pressure.
Yeah, that's for sure. It would have been really bad if they just saw us miss all of it and they just walk off. But
yeah, that was a good hunt. And I feel like it was a fairly successful year all in all, you know, I mean, Mike was able to get his two buck tags filled, the one in Eastern Oregon and one over here, and one of your guys' spots for the Western buck.
Yeah.
And then Lincoln, Jason Rush's son, got a nice buck, and you guys got that big elk.
Yeah.
And then Cody Fox, you know, went into that spot and killed a monster, biggest blacktail I've ever seen.
Yeah, that thing's giant.
And when you send pictures of that to people, they're like, nice mule deer. I'm like, no, that's a blacktail.
Yeah.
You know? And it's giant and just crazy. Like, didn't even know a blacktail existed like that.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have Cody come on and tell us the whole story because I want to hear all the kind of nuances to it.
Yeah. But
it was quite a buck. An undisclosed location.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's here he is.
Look who
there's the man,
up.
Co-host / guest. We're calling you, and then John's title, fantasy football champion.
What are you wearing?
I wanted to wear my heated vest for you because I thought you'd like it.
Third Diet Coke.
I'm working it. I was gonna get you one. Get your mic on.
Get your mind right. Let's go.
Yeah. We're just started talking about the elk hunt, so we've already fast-forwarded through the whole thing, but you can, you know, tell us it from your perspective.
Yeah, get in depth on it.
Yeah, that one's a little in your way.
Yeah, you really worked that out.
Well, I tipped it over because I knew that spot would be empty. I'll send it towards John.
Check.
Oh, he's back. Welcome to the studio, Dylan Williams.
I'm back, man.
You're loosening.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah, you can loosen that before you move it.
It's way easier.
Sorry, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Give me a sec.
Yeah. What hat you got on your head? Is that Yellowstone?
No.
What is it? What is that mark?
I don't know. That's a bowl.
I don't know.
Who ya?
I was just curious.
I don't know, dude. It was a gift.
Okay. Should you start hassling you right as you walk in?
Yeah, come on, man. Yeah. I changed 3 poopy diapers this morning. Really? Give me a second.
Hey, we talked. That was one of the things we talked about early on is how you guys are good dads. That's why you haven't been around a lot because you're taking care of these new babies.
Yeah.
And I also said, thank God you married pretty women so you could have attractive kids.
Yeah.
You know? So you guys both have some cute babies.
I mean, they got my looks.
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna say. I'm gonna choose not to comment. But I know. No, actually, you guys aren't bad looking guys. I'll say it.
Attaboy.
You have some good looking kids. Right? And I was telling John, I've never met John's baby. I've only hung out with your baby maybe once, but yeah. Ravioli day. Mm-hmm. But John's baby just always seems happy.
Yeah.
And your baby always seems chill. The law dog.
Oh yeah, he's real chill. The other one though,
big sis.
Yeah. Oh,
she likes to kick Dylan in the face.
Yeah, dude, she was up so late last night.
Yeah.
Probably till like, I bet she fell asleep at like 1:30.
Yeah, you look a little tired.
I'm here.
Yeah, we appreciate that you're here. I had a bunch of tables on all this mule deer data, but then I kind of forgot how to read them. So
okay.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah, we'll get back to it. No, there's some really cool data on that, but you can just bury yourself in it if you wanted to. Look at that sweet Wiley X brochure in front of you.
Yeah, I like that you left it right here.
I thought you might want to peruse it.
I did.
See if there's some shades.
I'm pretty good.
Hey, I got you a sticker too.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's so nice of you.
Yeah. Look, we also have your gun that I've been storing for you. Showed up today.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
I shot it already.
This is how we had to bribe Dylan to the studio, was to say, hey, I've got your gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked. Yeah.
And also John going, well, I'll just pick it up for you.
Yeah.
That was my other, no, I'll just come get it.
Yeah. But I was honestly being genuine about it.
I don't ever believe that.
Hey, and Dylan, there's an option. You can take the gun on the right that's yours. Or the gun on the left that I'm going to be selling at the gun show. Either one is available.
Yep.
If you choose the one on the left, I will keep the one on the right.
I'll just take the one trade. I got.
Oh, yeah, this is probably smart.
Yeah. You can sell that one if you want.
I mean, that Christensen might be valued a little more than mine.
Yeah, especially for $500.
But mine has the blade memories on it, so you can't put a price on that.
But they weren't good ones. So I don't know if I want that.
But oh, and the Cougar. That is the gun involved in the Cougar and Blade.
Yeah, you definitely need to get rid of that.
Yeah, no, that gun needs to get out of here.
Feel bad for whoever gets that.
Before somebody storms in here and tries to eat us right now.
Right.
And that's our protection.
So we talked about the elk hunt a little bit. We'll get your take on it. But before we go there, why don't you walk us through your blacktail success this year? Because you were able to harvest a nice blacktail.
Well, it wasn't much. I mean, hunted more than I anticipated I was going to be able to. But this day, got up with our buddy Kyler. And went to our first spot that I picked. And we're up about to that gate about 2 hours before daylight. There's already 2 rigs at it. So then, you know, being common courtesy, gonna leave them alone. We're gonna go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we start driving, look at some other gates that John and I have scouted before, rigs at every single one of them. And then we happen to come around this corner, buck jumps out in the middle of the road in front of us, turns around, runs back in the brush, and I see a gate up ahead. I just go, dude, just pull there. It looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And so we pull in there, get out. I'm looking on Onyx, and it takes us into a spot that John and I used to hunt with you. I think we told that story before, the 12 bucks in the day thing.
Yeah, that zone. Yeah.
And then so then we walk into that zone from the backside from this new gate, and as soon as we walk in, I look up on the ridge, and I see 3 deer, and it looks like it's one of them's a buck chasing 2 does. But it was so hard to see. It was first light, like first thing. This whole thing lasted about 6 minutes, that I was in there.
Yeah.
So we walk up to this road to get up closer to cut the distance. They were probably 600 yards when I first saw him. And then I start walking down the road. He jumps up at 40 yards, takes two bounds, and stops and looks at me. Right in the neck, dropped him.
Done. Yeah, and he's actually a nice buck. I mean, your first pictures, you couldn't see how good he was until you just got the head back from John. Yeah. And which we can talk about the whole head process, too. I did one this year. It's interesting. But the he's a nice three-point. He's got some mass to him. He's kind of wide. And
4x3.
Oh, but, 4x3, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to short him, that little sticker.
Yeah, don't.
But yeah, he was a nice buck. So he wasn't the same buck you saw jumping the road in front of you, though, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, he was. He was the same. It was him and the two does from top of the ridge. I saw him start working down the ridge line. Mm-hmm. But there was a big bowl on our right side that I thought they went into, but they just walked the ridge line down. The grass is so tall, so I couldn't see him. And then they just bedded down 40 yards off that little road.
Man.
Jumped up, two bounds, it was over.
Hey, if you know where to go, that helps sometimes.
Yeah. If you guys need pins, just let me know.
We hear you're big on just handing out pins. Yeah. We mentioned Cody Fox's monster, but we didn't talk details because we'd like to have Cody on and talk to us about that.
That's the gun.
Yeah, that is the gun.
He sold it to me, guilt price.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's a team effort sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if you want to dive right, just go straight from that to elk, or if you want to talk anything else about your deer season.
Or depending, do you want to touch on the Ochoco thing, or do you want to wait?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. So, yeah, I always forget that you actually got a fair amount of hunting in this year.
Yeah.
So you went over to Ochoco's with the older guys, with your grandpa, Billy, and Uncle Charlie, and your dad. Was it just the four of you?
And Jacob.
Oh, and Jake showed up too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I rode with Jacob over. But so we get there that first day, and you know how my dad is. He likes to sleep outside under the stars. So they...
Right by the fire, so you get that ash.
Yeah.
Smoke.
Yeah. Well, this time we didn't even... We're like, you know what? Well, it's fire season, right? And that whole half of that unit was burning, so I don't think they wanted more of that to happen. So they find this camp spot, and it's right on this creek. And I show up, where Jake and I show up, and we pull down there. Jake's headlights just turn perfectly over the cots, and all you see is this layered dust about 2 feet above everybody's head, and it's about 4 feet thick.
Yeah.
And it's just settling right there. And I'm going, who picked this one? You know? So we get there, get out, and it is ice cold down there by that water. And we get our cots all set up, ready to go for the night, lay down, and I'm just looking up, and I just turn a flashlight on, and all I'm just seeing is this dust everywhere above me. So I just put my head over my sleeping bag, or under my sleeping bag, shut my eyes, wake up opening day, and the whole sleeping bag, everybody's sleeping bag, is covered in a sheet of ice.
Oh, nice.
I went, hey, let's bring a tent from now on. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we go out hunting opening morning. We hunt for like 3 hours. We get back to camp. And then my dad goes, let's pick everything up and let's completely move.
We refer to that as bugging out.
Yeah.
It's always fun when everybody's like, bug out.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
And they do that little circle with their finger.
Yeah. Well, then that morning, Uncle Charlie made breakfast and he made probably 42 eggs and probably 3 pounds of breakfast sausage and just made it one big scramble. But it was like you could grab it would look like a burrito without a tortilla and everything just was stuck together in a perfect ball.
It's like a paella.
Yeah. And then you know how they are. They're like, you need to eat more, right. You know? So you'd eat a plate and then they're like, here, take some more. And then Grandpa Billy just reaches in with his hand, just grabs this wad of it out. And he goes, your turn, here, take some. So then I took a whole handful. I walked by the trailer, took two bites, and just popped it. You know, like I couldn't do no more of that.
Yeah.
So then we get to our new camp. That just so happened. So we passed probably like 6 of the easiest camps to get into. Mm-hmm. But the old guys, it wasn't perfect.
Right.
You know, they wanted it to be
It's got to be just right.
Yeah, extremely difficult to get in and out of and close to a creek.
Yeah.
Every time.
That way, if there was a chance for mosquitoes, they'd be there.
Yeah, just in case. They want to maximize the bugs.
I think they just like to wash up a little bit, maybe, or the idea of being able to wash up. I don't know, or the sound.
We got a camp trailer.
Yeah.
With a shower in it.
You know? They just like the white noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's that, the ambient creek noise.
But also, though, you know how dirty those creeks are there from the cattle.
Yeah, that's true.
So then we had to watch my dad back that 31-foot camp trailer down a 40-foot downward driveway into this camp that was straight downhill in between trees. And all three, Uncle Chris, Grandpa Billy, and Uncle Charlie, were going, "Nope, you need to go that way." And they're all doing different things.
Yeah.
And you could just imagine where my dad was at.
Yeah, he was probably pretty happy.
Yeah, he was stoked.
Yeah.
He just ended up rolling his window up and just did it himself.
Yeah. Just stopped listening. Yeah.
And then he gets down there. We get it all set up. Everything perfect. Go back out for about 28 minutes. Those old guys, they're just there, you know. They're just there to hang out, which was totally fine. It was a great time.
Yes.
And then rolled into day two. Driving into the little hay zone, Uncle Charlie ended up getting a pretty nice little 3x2.
Nice.
And then didn't get to fill the second tag, but it was a good one.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the most fun is some of that adventure of bugging out and those kind of things. Those are the memories.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember as kids, we'd be in a camp that we thought was pretty good. But everybody come back, "We're bugging out. There's no deer here." You know? And so we'd load everything up, all of our camp, and we'd head to wherever that next spot. And it never was close because they had some plan that they were, and this is pre-e-scouting, so they'd have this big paper map and they'd circle where we were headed or whatever, and then they'd make a plan and we'd all head that way. And I remember, we have some old pictures that we bump into on this hunt. We never saw an animal one, I know that, but we bugged, and the spot we went was super rocky. And by the time we got there, we were all really tired. And we're just like, "Right here," you know, kind of thing. It was where camp was going to be. Because they were more focused on getting to the zone they wanted to hunt than the camp on that one. There was no creek requirements.
Yeah.
But we were on this rocky cliff on the top of it, and it was super windy. So the whole night it was just howling, and the tents were just, that was pre-elk tents, so it was old, you know, cheap nylon tents or whatever, and they were just going crazy. And there was all this yellow bush everywhere. So there's pictures with all of us with this yellow bush in our hats. So it was a really fond memory for the yellow bush, but everything else was miserable. Yeah. I know that as a kid, we didn't see any deer.
Especially when we were heading home too, from driving down that rock bluff and that camp trailer that my dad had to. We're about a mile from my dad's house. Leaf spring on the trailer blows completely apart.
I saw that picture. Yeah, that it was riding a little low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
That poor trailer, wasn't it the year before that the wheel bearings went out on the way home too? Mm-hmm. We were having to cool them down with leftover beer.
Yep.
So, yeah.
You got to do what you got to do, man.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. That trailer has had some work done to it the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's took some hits.
Yeah.
It's basically brand new.
Yeah.
That's what my dad said. "I'm not taking it again."
Oh, really?
And then, but then we fixed the leaf spring. He goes, "That's brand new. See how good it pulls?" Yeah. "Dad, you took it from the house to the barn, man."
Right.
"You went 28 feet." Yeah. That's not, I don't think we can justify that one.
Well, that sounds like a good hunt, though.
It was fun. We had a great time.
So John gave us the quick rundown on your bull. But let's hear it from your perspective, and we'll see if the stories line up.
Well, so where do you want it to start from? From that day, or do you want to go Saturday?
What did you say about Saturday?
I talked about opening day.
Oh, you did?
Just that we went. I mean, we went to some spots, and then just kind of saw a sign, and then that kind of gave us the route that we wanted to take for the second day, and that's why we ended up there.
Yeah. So I remember, Sunday morning, we get to Nick's house. Shout out, Nick.
Yeah.
And when we get there, so we had a big plan for Sunday. And we get there, he was supposed to be riding with us. We show up, his pickup's running. And I'm like, oh, that's different. And he comes out and he goes, hey, I'll take you for a little bit, but I need to go to the emergency room.
Oh, I didn't like, hear this part of the story.
I was like, okay, what's going on? He goes, dude, this poison oak is bad. And he was fighting it Saturday really hard. His face was all swollen and everything. I was like, hey, you can stay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to
do this.
This is okay. Like, I'm glad he decided to go.
Yeah.
To be honest, but we didn't need it, you know? And so he goes, no, I'll take you for a little bit. It's fine. I got to wait till they open anyways. So
That's a tough man there.
Yeah. Oh, way tougher than me.
Yeah.
Way tougher than me. I would have texted you guys immediately and said, nope.
Yeah. My face is so swollen. Yeah. I'm not going. Yeah.
And so we get to that gate and we get all set up to walk in. As we walk in, we decide to make a plan. There's a road that splits to go to the bottom and then one that goes up into the clear cut. And so Nick decided he was going to go below just to try to see if we can't push, if he was going to be able to push him through the timber and out if we needed to. And John and I walked up. As soon as we get to where the gravel would end and it turned to clay, a buck jumps up right to our right. John's right in front of me. And the amount of movement I saw out of John, to where I didn't know if something was jumping at him and he was trying to kick or if he was grabbing his gun, I'm not exactly sure. But then I see him finally grab that gun and flip it around, and then he goes, oh, it's a deer. I was like, what are you doing, man? He goes, dude, I don't know. I thought it might have been an elk.
Just went on instinct.
Well, because it was so close and the amount of noise it made, because it was like 10 feet from us when it jumped up.
Was that a good buck?
It was a 7-inch spike. Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's a little guy.
Yeah.
I didn't know we had to bring that up.
Yeah. I was just curious.
It's too soon.
And then, so we turn that corner, and as soon as we turn the corner, I see what resembles two elk bodies.
Like the sweet new hide we have in the studio here.
Similar. Yeah. Yeah. But alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I see them, and I'm like, there's no way, you know? That's not elk. It's just some bush or something. And we keep walking. I'm watching them. I'm like, huh. I think one just took a step.
Oh, John also said you didn't bring your binos. So
no, yeah. So this whole time, as I'm looking at these elk, John's looking into the clear-cut glass in this way because there's another tree line. And I'm looking straight ahead. And I'm watching this elk take a step. And I don't say anything yet. And then we get up, we break over the hill, and I see one pick its head up and take a step. And I went, oh, John, you know? And so we drop down, and he picks up his binos. He goes, they're just cows. And then all of a sudden, he goes, oh, there's another one. And they start funneling out of the timber. Oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. And that happened 400 times.
How big realistically was the herd, do you think?
I think it was like 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or so. It wasn't 400, but.
Okay, dude.
I'm just
exaggerating to prove a point.
I know. Okay? I know. I just wanted to clarify how big the herd was.
To us, it felt like 400. And this whole sequence felt like 500 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was really 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. By the time we got to it, it was about 6 minutes.
Yeah. So far, the story's lining up pretty good.
And then, so John's like, I can't see any horns. And then next thing, all of a sudden he just goes, big bull. That's all he does. And then I start hallucinating. I think, I'm not exactly sure. Something happens to me internally. That's not okay.
Cause we have not harvested a lot of elk just in general. We have been more focused on deer. And also just haven't had that many opportunities to elk hunt. So, yeah. I mean, and this was your first probably bull encounter with a rifle in your hand, I would guess, with you having the tag?
Yeah, with the bull tag, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, continue.
It was like, so then I get down on the gun, and as soon as I see him, he's walking towards us, and he starts turning broadside, but he's still walking, and there's a bunch of cows in front of him. And then he just disappears behind this little knoll. And then so when he was walking out of the timber and I was down on the gun, I was pretty in a good spot to take a shot. As soon as he disappeared, the adrenaline and the anxiety of waiting for him to come back out skyrocketed. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm just freaking out, shaking, like, where's he coming from, you know? And then John goes, he's pushed. Oh, there comes a cow over the top of that hill. And as soon as I look, I just see him with his nose down pushing her up and over. And I went, oh, my God. And so he turns broadside. John goes, okay, take a there you go.
You said it was like right out of a hunting video, the broadside.
Yeah,
it was literally like a perfect scenario.
On this perfect little knoll on this one flat spot on top.
Angels singing and sunbeam.
Yeah.
You know.
So then I take my first shot. I have no clue where it went. Probably into somebody's house. I don't know. Not really. It was just a joke. Take it easy.
Yeah.
And then things got a little squirrely. Okay. I don't need anything out of you either. So then he faces dead away from me. I take my second shot. Drill him in the backhand. Third shot.
That's usually where you want to put your bullet.
Well, you gotta tell him like what I said.
Okay. So he was facing away. I didn't know if we wanted to just really put me on blast like that, but that's cool. We'll do it. So he's facing dead away. And John goes, hey, wait for him to turn. I go, dude, I'm shooting. And I just, and as soon as I said I'm shooting, John just goes, okay. Like, kind of, he just knew what he was in for at that point. So I shoot, and he goes, you hit him. And then he's, the other elk start taking off. And so he's, has his gun up, because we both had the tag, and he's looking for another bull, like a spike or something that was mixed in or whatever. And he turned back broadside, and I took my third shot. This one got liver, guts. And then, so clearly, Sam and I are very similar with shooting. It's not very good, especially in situations like this.
We have our moments.
We have our moments.
We have some good ones too, but you know, we went through the whole, I went through all the animals I've missed and shot, and there was a lot more misses than I remember.
Yeah.
Until you really itemize them out. So,
Yeah,
I'm with you. I'm in your camp.
So then, he turned back broadside. I had to start reloading. So I get completely reloaded, and he's standing broadside again. This is after I got the two bullets in him, and he's probably dead standing. Because I cut that artery in his back ham, and then his liver was completely gone.
And he's not moving much, I wouldn't imagine.
No, he didn't. He technically never moved from the spot he was in. He just kept pivoting back and forth.
Yeah. Okay. So he was zombied a little bit.
Yeah. And all the elk were gone. Well, no, there was a couple left, because when I went to go shoot that fourth shot, he stopped broadside, and I was set on him. And my scope, I had my scope turned all the way up, so I was zoomed all the way in on him. However, I didn't see on the left edge of my scope, there was a cow standing right in front of his, like right on his front shoulder, with her head down. And so like their coats just blended together real well. And so John's telling me, don't shoot. There's a cow standing right there. Whatever you do, for the love of God, don't shoot.
Yeah.
And
good hunting partner, John.
I was like, what do you mean? He goes, there's a cow right there. And I was like, no, there's not. And then she picks her head up and looks, and I went, oh, okay, yeah, I'll wait.
And let's, just for those that haven't ever tuned into our show, what caliber of weapon are you shooting at this elk with?
300 Weatherby Mark V Deluxe.
So, I mean, that's a...
180 grain bullet.
That's a lot of bullet and a lot of gun for that elk to just still be looking like, hey, that tickled.
Yeah. He just swallowed him.
Yeah.
And then he faced dead away from me again. And this time, if he would have dropped off that knoll, there's timberline that just drops straight down, super thick and brushy, and we were trying to avoid him getting there.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had two in him at this point, and I knew he was hit pretty decent, as far as I knew that one really got him, the backhand one really got him with that. It wasn't where I was trying to get, but it was where it happened. And I knew I got that artery. You could see the blood on his pouring out of the back. And the third shot hit his liver really good. I thought it was up kind of in more in the vitals, but it is what it is. It was still, it would still killed it.
And he was down at that point.
No, He's still standing.
Oh, so third. Sorry, I forgot about first shot. Yeah. I was thinking this was your next shot.
No.
Sorry.
Okay. So then he faced dead away again. And I tell John, I go, I'm going to shoot him in the neck. And I don't even know. We're shooting off a stump, but I don't remember. I don't recall if I picked my gun up and I was freehanding it, if I was still on the stump. I don't remember.
John? I think he stayed on the stump the entire time.
Okay, dang.
Yeah.
That's rough. So then I said, all right, I'm going to shoot him in the neck. As soon as I go for that neck shot, something happened. I pull the trigger, pull it down to the right, and just second backhand, boom, thumped it and cut that artery on that side. And then he took two steps and just went, boom, tumbled right over.
Yeah. I mean, not the ideal bullet placements, but you got to...
You learn from it.
Yeah, and you got a Roosevelt on the ground.
Yeah, well, then my favorite was Nick comes up, comes out from down below where he was, and he goes, how many did you get? Just with the shots going down.
Yeah.
Well, when I said that, I think he thought that we shot seven or something.
Yeah. Shot the he entire was like, herd.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then.
Did these guys even know what they're doing? This isn't geese.
Yeah. And I go, just one. He goes, oh, okay. Yeah. And then he goes, is it a good one? I was like, yeah, it's pretty good, I think. And he goes, all right, well, I'll be back in 2 hours. Get him to the road. Okay, see ya. And so he was fortunate. We were fortunate enough. Him and his boss was cool with him letting us in the gate so we could drive our pickup in. So John and I go back to the pickup, drive it up to where the gravel ends, parks, and we walk back up there. And we take all our pictures, get them gutted out. And also, when we were shooting, there was probably 40 pickups watching us.
John said it
was the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And then when we were taking pictures, there was a new line of pickups. Because as soon as after all the shots went down, they took off. That whole, as soon as they saw the elk run and where they went, they all took off in the same direction.
Heading to that, yeah.
And then by the time we were gutting him and taking care of him, we had a new line of pickups looking at us, watching what we were doing. And so we get them all gutted, jug down to the road. And as soon as we get down to the road, I'm like, man, I hate that we'd have to wait for Nick for this long. I think we should just try to drag it. You know?
Yeah.
John's like, okay, we can try. And we moved him probably 4 inches. I was like, we'll just wait for Nick.
Because Nick was going to get a four-wheeler.
Yeah, so then all of a sudden we hear a four-wheeler coming and we throw him over onto the four-wheeler. Nick's had to straddle his neck. John's holding both back hams up off the ground because if John would have let it go, it would have just slid. It would have slingshotted Nick right off the four-wheeler.
Jeez.
So John's holding the back hams up and Nick goes, I need you to sit on the front because the front tires weren't on the ground. So then I had to sit on the front of the four-wheeler. Then we took it back down the pickup, slid it right into the pickup. We're done.
Man, that's the way to do it.
That was easy as you get it, I think.
Yeah. That's a good story. It's definitely got some bumps in the road.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not my proudest moment, probably, as far as the shooting's concerned.
Yeah.
I told the story, I didn't say anything about the shots.
He did. He was just like, you know, we saw this beautiful bull and we got it done.
Yeah.
So I should have went that way.
You kind of just outed yourself.
I mean, going a little deeper is never bad. I feel like you're going deep today. We're getting you a little, what do they call that, unhinged?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
fresh off a baby night.
Yeah.
Nice sleep.
You just quit caring, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The genuine Dylan's coming through hard.
Yeah.
I like it. What do you think, John? What do you like? I like this version.
New year, new you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then... Now we got Sam E scouting.
Yeah, that's the latest thing. So now when we talk on the phone with each other, we like to throw a lot of pins out there and look at them. And then he tells me, nope, that's not where you think it is. That's how it usually goes.
Yeah, so that's for the fun part right now.
Yeah, and, you know, the breaking news there is his dad just got Onyx.
Oh.
So we were going to give him grief about it. and then we didn't even get to because he was like, which one should I get? And he already got it. So now the goal is to just hammer him with pins.
Yeah,
that's the plan.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do that, to be honest. I think it's going to be so fun.
I've had Onyx since that year I went bow hunting with Charlie, and so it's probably been 4, maybe 5 years, and I've never really used it properly or at all or downloaded the maps. And so I've had it, but I haven't really done much with it until this year, maybe last year a little bit. But Dylan would kept sending me like screenshots of his, and I'm like, how is yours so clear? And it's like easier to see everything. Mine has all this stuff everywhere. Like there's all these yellow lines and all this. And I had like the timber thinning lines on or something.
Yeah.
And they look like big worms all over your map.
Yeah.
And once I cleared all that, I was like, oh, now I recognize that draw or whatever. Because when you have all that noise, it's like you can't really pinpoint where you're at. So,
because I was always so confused, like when we were sending pins to each other, you know, before all this, and you'd be like, I don't know, that doesn't make any sense, it's confusing. And I would go, how? You've been there 500 times.
I know.
And then once he started telling me all these layers you had on, I went, oh, now it's making sense.
Yeah, and it really does make a huge difference to just peel all that off, and then you can actually see the landscape and the topography and try to figure out. It's still hard to pinpoint exactly. I'm going to be curious to see with the pins that we've put out there as like hypotheticals, when we actually get out there for the scouting trip, what we're going to be able to, like how accurate we are and how close we are. So yeah, that's the other news. We're going to do at least 2 scouting trips is the plan at the moment. So,
yep. I'm think the first one is probably just going to be me and J-Dub, which, and he's like, that was what baffled me when he's like, yeah, have Sam share those pins. So for the May trip, so we can get in there and do some scouting, because I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do some walking.
Yeah. So Dylan's dad, Jason, he just got his hip replaced, about 2 months ago?
Or October 30th.
Okay. So yeah, we're getting there. And I mean, the guy looks great and he's getting excited. And I think he's probably not pain free, but a lot closer to pain free than he's been in 10 years.
Yeah, he's just, so last night we were there. He goes, man, my leg hurts so bad. And he keeps complaining about how sore he is and how much it hurts. And my mom goes, go to physical therapy. Cause he canceled all those. He's like, I don't need that. Mm. You know, why would you?
Yeah, no.
You know? And he goes, I said, well, what did you do? And he goes, well, I tried to run up my stairs to my office about 3 times.
Up his stairs? Yeah. Jeez.
He said, there's my physical therapy.
Yeah.
I went, no, that's not. I don't think that's what they called for.
No.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been hard seeing him in pain these last few years because you could just tell, and he would power through it. He's never a guy that's going to complain or even say anything. He'd just keep going.
Like,
I remember on my antelope hunt, I mean, we did that one big walk, and I mean, you could tell he was hurting, and he just kept going.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, so I'm excited for the next chapter of him having, you know, his legs again. You know?
Him and his brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Double knees coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to be good. But we are bad about the PT thing.
Physical therapy or anything somebody tells you to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Well, my dad is, you know, had some health things, and he still keeps wanting to climb up a ladder to the very top of the tallest ladder he's got and clean his gutters and things like that. And it's like, dude, you're 73 and
you had kids for a reason.
You've got this visual spot that's not going away since he had a stroke. And it's like, you know, I mean, he's very capable. I know he is capable of it, but the other day when we were talking to him about it, my mom was in the room and I was like, here's the thing. You don't want to fall off of that. Cause then you're eating out of a straw, you know, if you make it.
Yeah.
And she goes, in the background, and I'm not going to be there if that's how you're eating out of the straw. She was, because, I mean, it is hard, though, because, you know, I think just in general, we just want to get things done, but it's definitely not worth the potential of, like, re-injuring his hip or my dad falling off a ladder.
You know? Oh, yeah. Well, he's blaming the doctor for the fractures in his femur that were already on x-ray went before he got the hip done. He's blaming the doctor when they put the new hip in.
But there is, that is a common thing that can happen when they're hammering that baby in there.
Oh, I'm sure. But if they're already existing.
Well, right. But my father-in-law's femur was got broke in his hip replacement, and they didn't catch it right away, and he was in incredible pain, you know, until they realized that they had actually broke it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, he's just dumb. And my favorite's the at Christmas. It was him, Uncle Chris, and Grandpa Billy. And they're sitting around talking about how doctors don't know what they're talking about. And it's like, you guys have more health problems because you don't listen to a doctor than anybody I've ever met.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard deal. I don't know. I'm on the, I'm in the middle. So I'm a, like, I'm halfway in their camp because I don't always trust what the doctors are telling me. But I'm also halfway in the camp that, eh, certain things probably are worth getting checked out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know? Also, I just feel like if I go to get a surgery, I'm probably just going to put all my eggs in the doctor's basket. Mm-hmm. Just whatever they say is probably what I'm going to do.
I think also part of that comes from your athletic background, too. It was like, hey, I want to get back to on the field or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
And it was like you had that discipline kind of, you know, like, hey, I got to do what they're saying so I can get back.
You know, as quick as you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that's good. Should be the same for them.
Yeah. The field of life is no different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cause that also just gets you back faster.
Okay. Let's stop lecturing them. If they ever listen to this episode, we don't want to,
they won't. Yeah.
We love you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you do. Well, shoot. I don't know how long we've been talking. 2 hours and 17 minutes, John, man. We
got after it today.
Yeah, we've been blowing it
first
up.
First one back, or just extra.
So all of those people that are still listening, congratulations. We're almost at the end.
Yeah.
So we are about ready to take off and head to the gun show. It's really good to see you guys in the podcast studio.
Yeah.
We talk a lot. Congrats on your fantasy football win, John.
Thanks.
And again, the prize money's not coming, as you know. So
I'm paying him.
Are you?
Yep.
Nice.
He's giving me this.
Nice. Well, look at John scored a OAP sweatshirt today.
Yeah.
Good job,
that's
dude.
The real prize.
I feel like he needed one.
Yeah, he does.
Because he reps the brand a lot. And
look at you.
Sweatshirts aren't bad.
Yeah.
So
I wore my sweatshirt yesterday.
Yeah. You guys are both repping quite a bit. You wear your hats quite a bit.
Yeah. I didn't want to today.
I have a sweet Kelty green one you can start repping.
Kelly Green.
Oh, Kelly Green.
Not Kelty.
Okay. I thought it was an Irish.
Kelty Green.
Dylan picked that one out.
Yeah, and it should be sold already.
Well, it was in the raffle for Jake, but he never picked it up, so it went back in the inventory.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, gentlemen. Well, it's good to see you both. Congrats on all the hunting success. It was John and I talked earlier. It's a pretty successful year. I mean, big bull. Couple bucks at my house. Jason Rush's son got a nice buck. You got a nice buck.
Did you get one? Got him.
We talked about that a little bit. Yeah.
No comment.
He passed on those little guys.
I know. You know? I was proud of him.
Yeah.
Keep it up. And next year is not going to be like that.
Hey, John, the big buck challenge. You could win some more prize money.
Yep.
You know, the
that's
BBB.
What I'm banking on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love winning all the bets.
Yeah.
We do need to finalize that contract.
Yeah. One of these days, you're going to cash in.
Well, no, we actually made a contract. We're going to get it all signed from everybody.
And notarized.
Yeah.
With witnesses.
You can't break a notarized bet.
The funds need to be deposited.
I just want to see Jason Rush jog down the 40 line.
I don't know what all the steps are. I don't remember, but there's a lot of them. We've also been doing a lot of over-unders.
Yeah.
So that's been actually kind of fun, like over or under 3 forking horns or whatever, or over or under 3 bucks on opening day. I don't remember all of them, but that was pretty fun.
It was fun.
So, all right, gentlemen. Well, it's good to see you both. Let's go make some bad decisions at a gun show.
Yeah.
All right. Dylan, come on. Get happy.
I am happy.